The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another Kiefer and Curry. He is Kip Kiefer on the left-hand side of the screen. I'm Tony Curry right here on the TKR app. Of course, you can hear this show at least 5 days a week wherever you get your favorite podcast. And a lot of people, Kip, are asking, you know, you guys talk a lot of music because we're both big music lovers. And they're like, how about you guys playing some music during your actual podcast? I don't know if we actually have time for that. First of all, you get most of the music you talk about on the TKR app because we play a lot of classic rock. And then we talk about licensing issues. And it would mean that we would only be able to play our podcast on the Spotify. But that may be something down the road, maybe something we could do in the future. Maybe do a show. Yeah, of some
that
of
would be
music.
Awesome. I on this week's Need to Know, Tony, I talk about their Mirage is being demolished, which is a sad thing for me, but it's going to be the ultimate hard rock hotel with the big guitar theme for the building, and it's going to be like a rock and roll museum in Las Vegas. I really am sad to see the Mirage go, but as far as classic rock and the things that you're identified with, I think the new Hard Rock Guitar Hotel right on the strip between Caesars and Treasure Island is going to be phenomenal.
No, and I heard you talking about that on Need to Know, another great show. You got to talk about that. I loved you talking about your grandchildren and the validity of your existence. And you talked about the Mirage and the fact that it's only been around 30 or 35 years and they're tearing it down. And such as, you know, stadiums. Now, I remember when they went in and redid the TED in Atlanta, I'm like, damn, and that place is only like 12 or 13 years old. And I mean, yeah, that was kind of like the new Camden Yards. It was something where you could walk around for an entire 3 or 4 hours and you could actually walk around the entire lip of the stadium, and they tore it down. And I'm like, wow, that's where we're at. And listen, I get, you know, the riverfronts and the Three River stadiums, those cookie cutters from the 70s, they needed to go. Yeah. But hell, they were up for 30 or 40 years before we started tearing them down.
Yeah, Turner Field was actually the Olympic Stadium in 1996.
Yeah.
And then they completely refitted it for baseball. And I thought it was a great park. The big rap on Turner Field was it was in a rough part of town, and parking was like non-existent. You know, somebody had to park 2 miles away and risk your neck to walk to the stadium. But moving into the suburbs, that was probably the biggest reason, was just the fact that the city of Atlanta completely controlled that, and a lot of people had stakes in different parking areas, and there was a lot of political reluctance to work with the Braves to try to fix that. And so they bailed to the suburbs, which is still a sore subject with people that actually live in the city of Atlanta.
Well, speaking of the burbs too, and I actually texted you, and I just realized the picture didn't go through because, like 1910, when the building was actually erected, and that's Rickwood, they didn't have cell phone service. So the cell phone service was about as good on Thursday as it was back in 1910 when that thing was built for $60,000, but I sent you a bunch of pictures.
60 grand.
I know, right? And I hope you get these pictures I sent you on Thursday. I actually went out there. Tickets actually were half price. Tickets were going for $275 through MLB.com and the MLB app. And by the time the game kicked off around 5:30, 6 o'clock on Thursday, tickets were going for $1.50. And so I looked at my son.
No way.
I said, yeah. And I said, and I texted you, and I don't know if you got it, but I said, I'm down here, man. If you want to come check the ball game out, we'll pick you up and go, because tickets were $125, $135 for the game.
Wow. I can't believe that.
And listen, you're only talking to, you know, 8,500 fans. I think they had 7,800, I think, there for the minor league game on Tuesday. And they obviously sold out on Thursday. But there's not a bad seat in the house.
So small.
What's so cool about that stadium too is, I was watching the game at Wrigley yesterday with the Mets, and you know they got those giant poles, you know, where the stands actually go up, and then of course there's a covering, which is really great for Rickwood because if it's sun's out, man, half the stadium's covered by a roof. But you got those poles, and you know you'd have to sit by your seats. Hey, listen, there is limited viewing opportunities, and really.
Oh.
You're talking about a pole that's, you know, a foot and a half wide. I mean, you could search around, look at it. If it saves you a couple $100, why not? But I mean, those old stadiums, that's the way it was. And now, of course, you have unobstructed view, and it was fantastic. But I wanted to mention that because that was just one of the things. We did a couple shows on it here on TKR, and it was everything that I had hoped it was going to be. I was disappointed that a lot of people left in the eighth and ninth inning. You were talking about parking and everything. They obviously had a setup where you had to go to Legion Field You had to show you had a ticket before you got on the Legion Field bus. And by the way, the MLB app sucks. By the way, we got our tickets through MLB, and we couldn't get our tickets. They told us to go to the will call window at the ballpark. Little did they know the will call window was about it's about the size of my head. I said, there's no will call window at Rickwood. They didn't have will call back in the 1910s, the 1920s.
Yeah.
They said, we promise your tickets will be down there. We got down there and our tickets weren't there, and somehow they worked something out and we ended up getting in. But it was a lot of fun.
I'm so glad you went. That's great.
Yeah. And I hope they do it again. I thought it was fantastic. You and I were talking about, you know, whether we should have major league sports in Birmingham. If we ever if we do, it should not be baseball. Because I don't think we're patient enough. I don't think we're prior enough. It's unfortunate because we've had the Birmingham Barons, the Black Bands here for years. But as far as a major league ballpark goes, it was more of an event to be seen at kind of thing. What was really cool though is, I mean, I'm sitting there and I was like 5 feet away from Joe Torre for like an hour.
Oh, nice.
George Foster was down there. Derek Jeter was three or four rows in front of me. I mean, and there's nowhere to hide.
Incredible.
Go ahead.
Barry Bonds, Big Poppy, David Ortiz, Alex Rodriguez, all the legends of the game were at Rickwood Field. What a great night for Birmingham.
It was fantastic. And again, the fact they sank that money into it, people were like, well, they sank all that money into it. They're going to do it again. What they sank into that is what a utility player makes annually in Major League Baseball right now. So it's not that big of a nut. That's how big the money is. Couple other things I wanted to get into. First of all, you mentioned the Mirage in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
The place I've been to many, many times. And we were talking about this, the longevity of stadiums, which is kind of where I went, and I kind of went off on a tangent there. But what do you think Vegas will look like in 30 years? Is there any casino that is off limits? I mean, I would have never thought the Binion's would have ever closed. And it obviously did in the middle of the night, by the way. I was there when it happened. There were people sitting at tables and the lights went out and they're like, we're closing. Take your chips mm-hmm. and get out of here. And there was nowhere to cash your chips in. It was crazy. And of course, it was one of the few places that had a bowling alley, which I thought was really cool. The Las Vegas Club, which is one of the originals down on downtown, which is one of my favorite places. And it was just compared to these other places, you know, Golden Gate, another place that it would just break my heart. If Golden Gate, home of the 99 cent shrimp, it's still 99 cents, been 99 cents since the 70s. They've got these unbelievable sandwiches for like $2.99. You get these huge rhubarb, just unbelievable rhubarb and Reuben sandwiches. I mean, they're unbelievable. They have a little delicatessen all the way in the back of the place, which is great. And still a place where you can stay. You can stay at the Golden Gate, get a room there, which I think is really cool. But is Caesars off the table? I mean, is there ever an opportunity? Could you ever see Vegas without Caesars? Could you see Vegas without Wynn? Could you see Caesars without the Palms? Could you see Caesars? What are some of the other places? The Riviera. There's some other places that have closed.
We're losing another one in the coming months. The Tropicana down at that end of the strip mm-hmm. toward Mandalay Bay is going to be destroyed because that's where they're going to build the brand new Oakland A's, which will be the Las Vegas Athletics Stadium, right dead on the strip where the Tropicana Hotel is.
How about that?
So that one's going to be going away. But you know, the Guitar Hotel is going to be right smack dab in the middle of the strip. It's going to be a shrine to rock and roll, which is, you know, the only saving grace. I love the Mirage since the day it opened. I said in my broadcast that I thought it was the transformative property that started to change this town's image from, just this pit of debauchery into a worldwide tourist place for everybody because they brought, I didn't mention too that Mirage was one of the first ones to bring the high-end retail in different things of that nature. Of course, that prompted Caesars to answer your question about Caesars, I don't think Caesars is ever going away because Caesars is the one property that every innovation that comes to Vegas, Caesars matches it. Caesars has built an amphitheater. Caesars has the Forum Shops, which is some of the best retail space on
Earth.
Caesars has renovated and built new towers over and over and over. Caesars is just a metropolis of a property. And I think they've always been ready and willing and able to acclimate their operation to fit the times. But some of the other ones, you know, you're going to start to see disappear more. Right across the street from Mirage, you've got the original Flamingo site, which is now the Flamingo Hilton, where it all started with Ben Siegel and his vision here. That hotel is old and kind of decrepit. You've got a Harris property right next door. They're both kind of old school properties on the most valuable space in Vegas. I look for something spectacular to go up on those sites in the coming years.
And a little surprise too, by the way. Real quick, a little surprise too that Harris, because Harris is everywhere now. I mean,
I know, but they've never really done anything with this property. You still feel like it's 1965 when walk in there.
And I don't know if that's the allure of it. We stayed at Harris for 13 straight years. It was the place we always, and then we stayed at Caesars. And by the way, Caesars has got four-headed showers. I love their showers. They got two shower heads on top.
Oh, Caesars is unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. I thought I was in a suite or something. It was unreal. But we always stayed at Harris because it was a little campy. And then it was a little back, and it wasn't nearly as expensive as the places. And most of the time, you show some points, you were staying at free. But I'd be really surprised if Harris would not sink, because I mean, Harris is everywhere. I mean, they're down in Biloxi, they're down in New Orleans, they're all over the place.
Yeah, I look for Harris to probably demolish their own property and try to build something to keep up with the Joneses here. But my ex-boss, Phil Ruffin, who owns Treasure Island, made a good point to me in a conversation a few years ago, because they were going to get rid of the hotels that he owned, a lot of the property next to the Frontier Hotel, which is now gone too. He sold most of that property to what's now Resorts World and Donald Trump, ironically. The Trump is right on the strip right there where Phil's Frontier used to be. But Phil said, this is the only business I can think of that you hope that a competitor will build right next door to your place, a bigger, shinier, more fantastic property than the one you have, because you're going to get all the spillover from that place.
No doubt.
And that was Phil's philosophy. Vegas is very dynamic in terms of what it is. And anytime somebody adds something spectacular to the strip, that just brings more people right down to that area.
There's no doubt. And again, you know, you're talking about COVID, you're talking about the 2008 situation. Vegas keeps building. I mean, just keeps building.
It's amazing.
Keeps redoing stuff, and it's really amazing.
And it's become a major sports mecca. I think we talked about that a couple of weeks ago. You got Major League Baseball coming in. You've got the Raiders with their brand new stadium. The A's have a brand new stadium. We talked about that, Tony, in that discussion about postseason college basketball conference tournaments, that they had five tournaments going here at one time. That takes a lot of facilities to be able to accommodate five different conference tournaments the same week.
And it could not happen at a better time. And I'll tell you why, because a lot of people think that because of all this legalization now, I think it's in 38 different states, you can actually make some type of bet. And we're not talking about table games, but you can do teams, you can do over-unders, FanDuel, DraftKings. I think a lot of people thought because it's so acceptable now and accessible that people would stop going to Atlantic City and Las Vegas, the two places where you could only make a bet until about 15, 20 years ago. I'm thinking now that we're bringing in a whole new mecca of bettors and gamblers. That could be good. That could be bad. And again, just because you give out free condoms doesn't mean everyone's having sex. I get that. But I do think because we're allowing gambling, I think people are going to explore a little bit more. And there just isn't anything like, I mean, you're on your phone with your guy or through your website, and that's all good. But there's nothing like sitting at the Caesars Sportsbook doing a Super Bowl. I mean, it's just, there's nothing like it. There never will be anything like it.
I'm really curious to see. I mean, we hear the from Case Kiefer, my son, who is strictly data and analysis and numbers. I wonder if this coming generation who has been raised on all this computer technology, I wonder how just sports gaming is going to evolve, because the things that you and I look at, you know, common sense, this line looks like it might be off, that all Case and his generation, and especially the younger ones coming up, Case was exposed to the computer age you know, in third or fourth or fifth grade. These other kids, my grandson, Tony, carries a tablet around as we speak. He's 3 years old. I mean, it's all going to be on that pad, and it's all going to be based on a completely different analysis system than you and I have been used to, and even Case's generation has. So I'm really interested to see how gaming itself of all kinds really evolves in this next, because believe me, that the world of technology is married to the gaming industry.
Can I tell you something now? And I'm going to admit something. I can do this because I'm 4 years removed from my official divorce. So it's over. She can no longer take me back to court. But I used to go to Home Depot every Sunday morning at 11 o'clock so I could call my man. And for people who don't understand that, you would sit in a car, you get on your cell phone, and of course, for cell phones, you'd use a landline, and you would call, and they would run down the lines for you for the NFL. They'd go, you know, New England,
call them out.
3-47, call them out. 3-47, the Bengals are 4-5, blah, 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 blah. And of course, the lines are changing as they're giving you the lines.
Yeah.
And you're writing them down as quick as you possibly can. And then you would go,
I'll call you right back.
I'll call you right back. That's after they give you figure, 729, you're minus 1735 my way. You know, that's that. And then you would call back with the lines. And by then, sometimes the lines had changed. You could buy your halves. A lot of games didn't even have over-unders. In the National Football League, there were some guys that didn't do over-unders on National Football League games. Now, imagine that on a Saturday when you've got over 100 college basketball games going off at one time. You could be on your phone with your guy for 12, 13 minutes, and there'd be 12 or 13 guys actually working the phones in a hotel complex somewhere, taking phone calls from guys, and everything was written down. And I mean, there were many times where you had a couple of beverages and you couldn't read your own writing. And I don't remember if I had 100 on this game, or I can't remember if I had 50 on this game. There'd be some time. And for the most part, they were always right. And then, of course, until it got computerized. So, yeah, I kind of miss those romantic days. I don't miss it so much. But, and then, of course, you know, you're like, well, when would they be open? Are they open 20? No, they were only open for an hour and a half. They opened for, you know, they were open from, you know, 10:30 to noon. They were open about an hour and a half before they come in at 3 o'clock, close at 4, come back at 5 for the night games. I mean, yeah. It was a lot of fun to do.
Wow.
It's crazy. And I know you.
Home
know,
Depot, huh? Did you go in and buy a piece of plywood?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I go to Home Depot every single Sunday for about 13 weeks, and I'd come home with a box of nails and either a very big smile on my face or a frown. But yeah, and then of course you meet your guy on that Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday afterwards, depending on when.
Behind the dumpster.
Something else before we get into music real quick. What will or what can we learn from the debate on Thursday? We're doing the show on Monday, by the way, the 24th or the 23rd, 24th. What can we, June 24th. Why are we having this?
Here's my theory. And it's backed up by several people that are pretty good analysts and experts that I respect, but I had this thought. There's never been a debate this early, Tony. So you have to wonder, and it's all been controlled by CNN and the major networks, and they made the offer because for a long time Biden said he wouldn't debate Trump because Trump's not worthy of debating. Sure. Well, that changed when Biden's poll numbers are just tanking right now. I think the Democrats feel like they have to get him on stage to try and revive their campaign, or he's just going to continue to circle the drain and eventually disappear. But it's a real risk. But I think that I don't think that they're stupid enough to put him out there and have him fail spectacularly, which a lot of people expect. I think they'll have Joe pretty juiced up for this again, just like the State of the Union address. But that makes him reckless and makes him hostile and angry. And I think Trump is going to be able to bait him a little bit and get him to say some things that people are going to go, what did he just say? And if that happens, I think the reason that they wanted to have this historically early, before even the conventions, if Biden goes out and cannot perform and gets a negative perception from the American people, look for an amazing development at the Democrat convention in Chicago coming up later this summer. I think they're going to pull the plug on Joe and say, Well, you know, we're going to have to go a different direction here because we got to have an electable candidate. I think, Tony, this is an audition for not only America, but for all the people that are banking on Joe Biden and the Democrat Party. I think if Joe does not deliver in this debate, or, it, you know, the bar is set so low, basically he just needs to get to the podium without wandering around lost or tripping over something, or not to say a bunch of illegible sentences, they're going to declare it a success. But I think this is an audition for Joe Biden's fitness for the presidency, because if you watch him, you can't imagine this guy being the president for four more years. He only works about 3 days a week. He goes to the Delaware Beach House like for 4 or 5 days at a time. We're not seeing him now. He is in Camp David, the presidential retreat in Maryland, with nothing on his schedule for 8 straight days preparing for the debate. This guy's the president of the United States. You don't take 8 days off to prepare for a debate. Trump is doing 5 rallies in the next 6 days. Yeah, so, you know, they're talking about the age difference. It's only 3 years difference. Trump just turned 78. But if you look at the energy level, Trump will go to rallies and then get on his jet and fly to Las Vegas and be at a UFC card until 2 o'clock in the morning. He's a huge fan of MMA and the UFC. He sits ringside with Dana White, the president. All the fighters jump over out of the octagon and go over and talk to him after the fights. This guy has got energy level a thousand times more than I have. So yeah, you can't compare that to Joe Biden, which they try to do. Well, he's only 3 years younger than Joe Biden. It's not the age, Tony, it's the functionality.
Speaking of a guy who had just incredible energy and it ended up killing him, Michael Jackson passed away 15 years ago tomorrow. Any thoughts?
Oh, that 15 years ago?
15 years ago tomorrow.
That is stunning. That is absolutely shocking.
At the age of
it's 50, been that long.
At the age of 50, he was 28.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And also on this date, 1974, Sweet Home Alabama was released.
Oh, how about that?
50 years ago today.
When we had Damon Johnson on the television show earlier this year, who's now the lead guitarist, and I think when we lost Rossington, that was the last surviving member of the original band. Is that not correct?
It was. You correct? Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, when I told Damon that I'm so thankful that in 1976, my friend Joe Lipham basically made me go with him to the Fox Theater, which is it's kind of like the Alabama Theater in Birmingham. It's the iconic old time classic, you know, massive theater. Leonard Skinner played there and he made me go to the show. And Tony, I am so thankful because I wasn't a fan at the time, but I'm so thankful to this day that I went there and heard Sweet Home Alabama and Freebird and Give Me Two Steps and Tuesday's Gone. One of the greatest shows I've ever seen. I was like 15 years old. It was amazing.
Roger Daltrey came out last week and said this is the worst part of classic rock right now. Do you know what he said?
No, I didn't hear that.
Set list. He said set list are killing the live show. He said, you know, if you want to go out and watch rock and roll, it's fine. He said, but, you know, back in the day, you were always surprised by what you were going to hear. You didn't know what you were going to hear. And now people can look up from date to date the set list of shows. And of course, we're not changing our music up. I would say, listen, if you don't want people to know what your set list is, change up your set list. You know,
yeah.
Change it. You got shows to do as A's and B's. Change up your set list. Get it done. But he's like, listen, it sucks because now everyone knows what I'm going to be playing next. There is no element of surprise. And he said, you know, we used to have to call. Hey, listen, I was in Louisville, Kentucky last night. What did Roger Daltrey play? And you could go through his list. That was the only way you could do it. Now, of course, there are websites. Setlist.com is one of them. You can go and see exactly what everyone's playing when they do it. This is a little bit of a post-cure than what we've seen from, I know that Yes recently got off tour, I'd say recently, 5 or 6 years ago, where they played 3 of their albums back to back to back. They played their albums from start to finish. Blackjack Symphony has made a living off of doing that, where they're playing albums from start to finish. And to know, first of all, those songs are coming up is a little exciting because we all have our favorite songs. To know that some songs that you normally wouldn't hear in concert are certainly going to be played. You know, I don't know if you're ever going to hear And You and I, a 10-minute epic from Yes, but you knew when they were going to be playing that album that you were going to hear it. I wanted to ask you the question. You've seen Jackson Browne a million times. I don't know if you check out his set list before you go. Do you want to know if it's a boy or a girl before she's born?
You know, I'll tell you, because I saw Jackson three times last year. The first one was in Birmingham at the Alabama Theater, which we were just talking about, on a Wednesday night. I saw him again the following Monday in Fort Lauderdale. Now, he played a show in Jacksonville in between there. I looked at the Birmingham. I remembered. I didn't look in advance of Birmingham, but I did look before the Fort Lauderdale show at the set list for Jacksonville, and it was basically the same as what he just played in Birmingham. So I was already prepared at Fort Lauderdale. Well, he's just going to play the standard list. Tony, I was so proud. He played a completely different song set.
Oh, wow.
And interjected a couple of songs that I had not heard in concert in 25 years. Wow. He really went deep, and I don't know what it was about the Fort Lauderdale show. And then, of course, I saw him here in Las Vegas a couple months later at the Venetian, and he's playing kind of a smaller room and did a lot more piano stuff because he plays guitar and does a lot of piano songs. But all three shows that I got to see Jackson in a two-month period last year were completely different. So wow. I'm really grateful for that. It was almost a catalog of his music.
What a blessing. And you know, for a guy like him, was he solo or did he have the entire band?
No, he had a band with him. Yeah,
That's amazing because I mean, normally you bands just don't get up on stage and start doing a 9-month tour. You know, you have rehearsals. You know, and
yeah,
and
especially a guy like Jackson because his key band guy David Lindley passed away a couple of years ago, and a lot of the staples that he had back in I guess in his prime when he was doing Late for the Sky and The Pretender and those kind of albums, most of those guys have moved on or retired. So he basically rounds up a really tight bunch of musicians, but to your point, these aren't people that have been playing with him for years like he used to have. So yeah. I would think it's a lot more difficult to change it up when you've got just kind of hired help.
So I will tell you this, Bruce Springsteen, the last time he played here in Birmingham was about 12 or 13 years ago. Yeah, it was probably 20 years ago now to come to think of it, because I remember I just had a miscarriage and that had to be 20 years ago. It's funny how you remember those things, because we end up going to the show, just kind of forget about it. But it was one of the best shows I'd ever seen. But I only recognized four songs from the entire night. He played 3 hours at the BJCC, and I only recognized four songs. I wanted to hear Jungle Land. I wanted to hear 10th Avenue Freeze Out. I wanted to hear Hungry Heart. Didn't play any of them. And it was still one of the best shows I'd ever heard. And I'm telling you right now, if I had gone on and checked out his set list before he played that evening, I'm not sure I would have gone.
Yeah.
Because I've been playing music for 35 years on the radio. There ain't a Bruce Springsteen song that I shouldn't know, but I didn't know any of these songs. He was playing stuff from the river. I was like, what is this? But he played every song like it was the last time he was going to ever play it. And he made me a fan of his music. And so in that way, I don't want to know the music's being played, but in a different kind of way, you know, the first thing I do is when I hear, you know, a band come out and say, listen, we're going to play, you know, this album from start to finish. The first thing I'll do is I'll pull that album out, and I want to see the songs. I cannot believe they're going to play that in concert. I can't believe they're going to play that, because there are a lot of B-side songs or songs that you normally would never hear. So yes or no, do you like the set list idea or no? Or would you rather be surprised?
I would rather be surprised. And like you, if I look at a set list and it's all like new albums or whatever they just come out with now, and they want to play all these new songs, that doesn't really, I'm like you, I guess I'm too nostalgic. I want to hear all the classic songs and make sure that they're included. And there are certain songs of certain artists that I like that are absolutely essentials. I love the Billy Joel live concert from Madison Square Garden, or actually, awesome. That was MSG, that was on network TV. And he played nothing but the staples, the ones that I would be. Songs.
Yeah, he played Vienna, which I thought was, you know, which is a staple for his shows. But he played Innocent Man, and Innocent Man's one of the songs that when you think of Billy Joel, you don't think of Innocent Man.
Yeah, I don't think it was commercially as successful as some of his other ones, but it's one of his greatest songs.
Yeah, so I mean, I was really happy, and I think maybe he just sang it just to see if he could sing it, because he was talking about the octave changes, and I mean, he could still drill it. I think he wanted to prove that to himself. But I mean, of all the songs that you're going to play, you may be right. You're thinking of, you know, Piano Man, you're thinking of all of his big songs. It's Your Life, but you don't think of innocent man. And I applaud him for that, because there are some songs like A Matter of Trust, which I think is one of his best songs, that he does not play live in concert, but that's one of the songs that he would play. So I applaud his effort on that. And maybe because, you know, when you're talking about a band like a Def Leppard or something, it's more difficult to change up the set list than it is if you're, say, Billy Joel or James Brown or Jackson Brown or James Brown, for all that matter. And maybe it makes it more difficult. But, Roger, we're going to have to go against you on this one.
One quick point on that. I miss the late, great Dan Fogelberg.
Oh, man.
Because I always thought his shows were a surprise. He would always reach back and find a song that wasn't necessarily a big hit, but it was almost like he styled, you know, I got to the point where I'd say, I can't believe he played that song. It's almost like he included that just for me. You know, because it was songs that I thought I was the only person that knew. So I do miss the great Dan Fogelberg. What a great showman and musician and singer-songwriter he was.
And what a lot of people will tell you, if you ever go out to one of these little Mexican bars or one of these bars where there's a guy playing, you know, he's got the little thing on the, he's got the little music box in the bottom, and he's got the harmonica there. Don't play Dan Fogelberg. They will not play. You know why? Dan Fogelberg is incredibly difficult to play. I didn't realize that. I've talked to a good friend of mine, Jeff Tyler, and he's like, I don't do Dan Fogelberg because it's too hard to sing. It is just
so interesting. How about that?
And I listened to it. You know, I listened to Go Down Easy, which was a great song I absolutely love. Hard to Say, which is one of my favorite songs of all time. But he's like, yeah, he is really difficult to play. And if you go back and listen to Dan Fogelberg and find some live stuff, I mean, it's even difficult for him to sing sometimes too, certainly in his later years.
If anybody likes the Dan Fogelberg hits, because the song that I was really referencing that he sang that blew me away, because it's one of my favorite Dan Fogelberg songs, it's called The Reach. Mm-hmm. And it's a tribute to Maine lobster men and the whole tradition of just, they still do it the same way as far as harvesting lobsters as they did in the 1800s. These long lines, they kind of go out to what's called the reach, which is like as far as you can see from the shore, and harvest these lobsters in these long days. The song is just beautiful, and he performs it so perfectly. When he played The Reach at one of the last shows I saw him at, it was and for those who don't know, he contracted prostate cancer and it took his life at, I think, just in his late 40s or early 50s. He's been gone quite a while, but those kind of artists are irreplaceable. And when they crank out a song that you love that you don't expect, it's one of the great moments in concerts that I experience.
And him and Jackson Brown, I put side by side.
In
the fact that whenever they had a relationship tragedy, you better buy the next album.
Because, man,
when they had a breakup, dude, they wrote their best stuff. It's unfortunate because they were in sheer hell. But, I mean, you're talking about Jackson Brown, Billy Joel, Dan Fogelberg. You're singing, and some of these guys, you could just tell she just dropped the bomb on him, and he would sit down with a pen and paper and start writing some of his best stuff. And, I mean, it was, you know, and you're thinking to yourself, you're Dan Fogelberg. No one breaks up with Dan Fogelberg. Well,
everyone
broke up with Dan Fogelberg. Every marriage you had in a divorce is like, how's that possible?
If you've been in a bad breakup, listen to the Dan Fogelberg song, The Last Farewell, because he's lamenting the end of his relationship. He's recalling all the good times, but he says that, but now as the curtain falls, this is our last farewell. And in Jackson Brown's side, the entire I'm Alive album was written when Daryl Hannah completely broke his heart. Daryl Hannah, the actress, had developed an obsession with John Kennedy Jr. and just up and left Jackson Brown. And the whole song I'm Alive is about her just dumping him. And he's just absolutely distraught. And the whole I'm Alive album, when Jackson Brown is brokenhearted, his musical talent and his songwriting ability is second to none.
And Daryl Hannah's with who? David? Who's David? She's with now? Daryl Hannah with David?
I don't remember who she ended up marrying, because, you know, John F. Kennedy Jr. broke her heart by marrying his wife, who tragically died in the plane crash that when he was trying to fly to wherever he was going. And her sister was on that plane.
She's with Neil Young.
Is that what she's with?
She married Neil Young, yeah. which is kind of like one of those
Yeah, I always,
things. You're
every
like,
time I hear the
dude.
song, Old Man, Take a Look at My Life, I think Neil Young is wearing the different hat now,
She
because
married him 6 years ago, and I'm thinking about, I mean, have you
that's
seen Neil Young?
incredible.
And I mean, listen, Daryl Hannah doesn't look anything like she did in Splash. Okay,
No,
let's get past
no.
that. But it's still Daryl. At one point during Splash, she was the hottest damn thing on earth. She
She
was
was.
smoking hot. And so you get the Kennedy thing. I get the Jackson Brown thing. When Julia Roberts hunkered down with Lyle Lovett, I get it because. You know, and golly, Billy Joel had Christie Brinkley, for God's sakes. I get it. I mean, rock and roll, man. There's a power behind rock and roll. You get beautiful women. Beautiful women love great sense of humor. That's why comedians have good looking gals, or they love rock and rollers. But at some point, you would like to think that Daryl Hannah would roll over and look at Neil Young and go, what am I doing?
And it's substance for a whole different show, Tony.
It
But
really is.
I go back and look at the classic poets and all of the great songwriters of all time, people that craft lyrics, and all of them, or I won't say all of them, but all of them are either about the miracle of attaining love or the absolute heartbreak of losing love.
Yep.
And when I sit down and I try to write some thoughts along those lines, I get chastised by people who say, you shouldn't be writing about that in public. How come I can't write about it when all these famous people have made their bones doing that? I have made their living.
You need to put
I
music
don't
where it.
understand why am I exa how come I can't express my feelings?
No, you write your stuff out and save it, and you should come out with another book. Come out with your second book. Do Kip Kipper's poetry, man. I'd
Yeah,
buy it.
I just wrote lyrics to a great song that I just didn't have the guts to publish because I don't want to be publicly barbecued. But the name of the song is For 2 Days She Loved Me. And it's all about relentless pursuit. And for 2 days I was in the catbird seat, but it came to an end. So
Oh,
that's
well,
my
man.
new hit on my subsequent album that's coming out
We'll
in the next lifetime.
get into that next week. Hey, don't forget to join us on Saturday mornings, 10:30, 11 o'clock. We butt up right against, of course, that early ABC / ESPN / Disney game this year. Of course, going to kick off with Clemson and Georgia. What a fantastic start. And of course, no one turns a game on right when it starts. You're going to be turning in to Kip Kiepper and Tony Curry, the starting lineup again with a legend, Terry Quillian. Of course, your boy doing a fantastic job. He's going to give us all kinds of plays. Super hot during the football season as well. We'll do that again on Saturday morning. Until next week, my friend, thank you very much. I appreciate you.
Tony, it's always been a pleasure, and we never know where we're going to go with these discussions, but it's always a good place.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.